Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and we're here with Finn Man and Robin. Good evening,
Andy.
Robin.
Hello.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
And today is December 15th.
Oh, my.
Middle of December, and on this date, Thomas Edison patented the phonograph.
Oh, my.
And this was long before hip-hop, but what year do you think that might have been, folks? Robin already knows.
Should I tell?
Well, you give him a moment to think about it, okay. And then we tell. That's right. We need the theme from Jeopardy, I guess. Go for it.
1877.
That's pretty hard to believe that we had a phonograph back then.
Huh.
Recorded voice. And it was on this date that the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, went into effect. Now, anyone that knows a little bit about American history ought to be able to come close on that year. First 10 amendments to the Constitution. This did not include the repeal of Prohibition yet, folks. You're getting ahead of yourself.
When?
1791. I remember it well.
No, you don't.
And the thing that December 15th means to me, Robin, is this is the day that my mom passed away way back in 1980. So it's a meaningful day. I always pause. It's not like people have to say, oh, I'm so sorry, because it's been 28 years.
Mm-hmm.
But she was an amazing woman. And so I want to just share a little story about Mom. Mom was an innovator. And to the extent that I am adventurous and can come up with new ideas, I credit my mom. I'll give you three examples. In the mid-50s, right, I was born in 1950, so when I was a very young child, she did three things that no one else had thought of doing. One was she got tired of passing food.
Mm-hmm.
And we had eight kids and a big kitchen table, but a big rectangular kitchen table in this big country kitchen. And she ordered a round table from some store, and they delivered it. And then she went to the local carpenter, and she had him build a 4-foot Lazy Susan. No one had ever seen a Lazy Susan bigger than 18 inches, as far as we knew.
Mm-hmm.
And the local carpenter built one. You couldn't order it. You couldn't find those. Now, today, you can find 4-foot Lazy Susans in a Chinese restaurant. Some Chinese restaurants have round tables,
mm-hmm.
right? And they just put the food on there. It works well. But we were doing that in the mid-50s. And Mom was just tired of passing food. And there's a couple of rules
eight
you have
children.
To get.
Children, wow.
My brother still has the table and the Lazy Susan.
Mm.
I saw it last year when I was home. And you have to learn a couple of lessons. The first is, the first time around, when you're feeding a family of 10, first time around, after you say grace, you have to go clockwise. You have to go the same direction. And you have to know ahead of time which way it's going to be, because when you put the mashed potatoes on, it has to be followed by the gravy. So we always went clockwise. And then Mom knew to put the mashed potatoes on in the gravy. Later on, after everyone's been served once, you can go the other direction. But you cannot have people pulling on the wheel in... It would be bedlam. So you have to go around in the same direction, and you just move it till you get whatever's in front of you. And then once everybody's had a shot at everything, then you can go the other direction. The second thing is that we learned was, and this Mom learned this the first month she had the wheel, always called it the wheel, was it's a mistake when you have a birthday party for a six-year-old to take the caps off a whole case of Coca-Cola, and these are these 6-ounce returnable bottles back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Glass bottles. It's a mistake to take the caps off of all of them and put them all on the wheel because they display nicely. Because you're likely to have a 6-year-old come in and say, wow, and give that wheel a spin, and all the Cokes go flying. So that was another valuable lesson. But that was one innovation. The second innovation that Mom had, and this is not so much hers, but she wouldn't have done it. Dad wouldn't have done it without her. They were going to buy a station wagon. They needed a bigger car, something that might carry almost the entire family. Well, they were making 3-seater station wagons by then, and that'll take care of 9 people, 10 if you got small kids, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
So we could take the whole fam-damily, as Mom used to say. And they went out to get a station wagon, and they came home with a 1948 Cadillac limousine. It was black with white wall tires. It had running boards. It had two radios. It had a radio in the front and a radio in the back. Of course, both AM. There was no FM in 48 when they built this thing. Mm-hmm. It had power windows.
Good heavens.
It not only had power windows. Actually, at the time, they ran on hydraulic fluid. They weren't electric. So you could smell the hydraulic fluid. And Dad ran a garage, so they could keep this stuff repaired. But it had a power window that separated the chauffeur in the front from the passengers in the back. And that is what sold Mom on the car. Uh-huh. And so there was a wall that could go up, and you had a button in the front, and she could put this up. And she didn't care if the kids screamed or whatever they did in the back. We could get away with a lot if the window was up. And so I didn't have to learn to drive on this, but the 1941 Chevy was a stick shift. And so when it came time for Judy and Tim, my oldest brother and sister, no, Judy took her driver's test on the 41 Chevy. Tim and maybe Mike took their driving test. I believe, and I could be making this up, but I believe at least two kids in the family took their driver's test driving this 48 Cadillac limousine. It had power steering, but it was a boat. It was huge. And the back window was small. So you really, parallel parking was ridiculous with something like that.
Now, which number child were you?
I was six out of eight. So I was born in 50. I was probably 3-4 years old. And the other interesting thing about it was this car belonged to the Jell-O King. That's what we called him. The fellow was, he hadn't invented Jell-O. He bought the patent to Jell-O from somebody who couldn't make a go of it. He turned it into a multi-million dollar business. And so he owned a number of these Cadillac limousines in different cities. He happened to be based in Rochester, New York. And in fact, Jell-O was based in Leroy, New York, outside of Rochester for many years. He owned a penthouse, or rented a penthouse, on the top floor, 10th floor of the Sheraton. And the story we heard, and this is as little kids, he'd done everything he wanted to do, seen everything, and he didn't have any reason to live. He jumped off the balcony and committed suicide. And his heirs inherited, I'll say, 3 to 6 of these Cadillac limousines. And they said, we don't need these things. And they put them on the market, and Mom and Dad were there to scoop one of them up. And the last innovation that Ruth Finn did was the swimming pool. We always wanted a built-in pool because we couldn't take vacations. You can't take 8 kids anywhere. There were no Winnebagos back then. And so she didn't do it when we were real young, but she wanted to put in a pool. And we couldn't really afford a built-in pool, a cement pool, as they say. So they started making, by the early 60s, they started making these aluminum sided pools, these 4-foot sidings, you know, that sit above ground. Mm-hmm. And they even made them with the deep end. So the shallow end was above ground, but the deep end would be like the shape of half a football and would go in half the pool. And so you could actually have a diving board. Mm-hmm. And Mom wanted one of those, but she didn't want to have to sit. She wanted to be able to sit on the lawn and see the kids in the pool and what they were doing and make sure they're safe. And with walls on the pool, you can't. So she talked to Russell Mason, the guy that put in these pools, and he was an old family friend. Everybody knew everybody in Webster, New York in the 50s. And she said, Russell, I want this pool. I want the one with the deep end, the 28-foot diameter pool, but I want you to sink it in the ground. I want a built-in pool. He says, Ruth, we've never sank one of these in the ground before. She said, don't worry about it. I'll take responsibility. She said, I know what you're saying. It could fail. The walls could cave in. I'll take responsibility for it working. You aren't liable, but I want you to put your best installer on it. Because when they do install one, the deep end, the half a football of the deep end has to be sunk in the ground. And it's an art to installing these things. It's basically a bladder. It's a liner. Mm-hmm. And you have to dig out the hole, get it the right size, and put the sand on the, 3 inches of sand all the way around, and then put the liner in and fill it with water. And if you got too little dirt or too much dirt, it isn't right. Right? The liner will be either stretched too much or it'll be there'll be a lot of slack in it. Mm-hmm. So they had Stryker, their best developer, do it, And he put the thing, sunk it right in the ground. And that lasted from, I don't know what year we put this in. I'm going to say it was 63. Mm-hmm. And that lasted until the summer of 76. The winter of 76, 77.
And then what happened?
Well, I was back living there with my family, mm-hmm. my wife and two kids, for a year before we moved out to St. Louis. And Mom and Dad were in Florida, and we were taking care of the place and living there. And in the middle of the winter, my brother Billy was living there too, and somebody called me to the window and said, "You got it, Andy, listen to this." And we started hearing this creaking out there. What had happened was there was a leak in the liner. We didn't realize it, and the water level went down about a foot and a half. So the water leaked out and saturated the ground around the pool. So now it's like mud. It's soft and sloppy. It's not firm ground anymore. Mm-hmm. And the sides of the pool started caving in. And it's aluminum. And so there was this creak, creak, creak all the way. And I just sat there. I took a whole roll of pictures as I watched the pool just cave in on itself. Huh. And there's nothing you could do. There was just no way to save it. Right? You just watch it happen. Well, we were only going to be there one more summer, and the boys, we had teenage sons, so it would have been nice to have them use the pool that last summer, that we were looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. But after that, they were going to sell the house, and the pool's a liability, as you know, in a lot of places anyway, especially that far north. Mm-hmm. Most people did not. It's not Southern California where a pool's a real cool thing. Mm-hmm. We had a heater in it, but it just was just as well. We lived out in the country. We were on a farm, essentially. We had farmers that had tools. And so Joe Meyer brought his backhoe up
and just covered
it over with dirt. And it was never seen again. Hmm. But that was Mom's third innovation, was the built-in pool. And after that, we saw a lot of people, not just in town, but you heard about it elsewhere in the country. But to my knowledge, Ruth Finn was the first person to have a above-ground pool sunk in the ground. The guy that did it, Russell Mason's company, he'd never heard of it being done anywhere before. Hmm. So that's...
She was amazing.
She was amazing. And so a tip of the hat, Ma. And we'll move on. Let's move on to some lighter news and a few things that are in the news, Robin. There was another little article, though. This was in this morning's paper. And there was another article basically making the case about the inauguration.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
That the trains are not going to be able to handle the crowds on January 20th, and neither are the roads. Mm-hmm. It isn't going to be pretty. You know, if I was toying with the idea of going down, I'm no longer toying with the idea of going down. It mm-hmm. can't be done.
And even if you live in Washington, you won't be able to get around. You won't be able to do anything.
That's the thing.
You just have to barricade yourself in your house.
Right.
Get provisions and stay in.
Change we can believe in, indeed. But, what they're saying basically is, they talked about the mall being full, mm-hmm. Robin, and so they said could be 3 to 4 million people. That would fill the mall.
Good
well,
God.
I first thing I thought about is where are the Port-a-Johns going mm-hmm. and how many will there be?
Three to four million people.
But they are talking about the trains. They said if there were 1 million people afterwards that want to get on the subway system, and let's face it, if there's 2 to 4 million people there, they're more are going to want to get on the subways because the roads are closed. The mm-hmm. bridges going in are only going to be open to buses and mass transit types of vehicles.
And pedestrians.
And pedestrians, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so they're saying that it would take, if 1 million people go to try and get on the subways, it would take 7 to 8 hours to get everyone out. And, you know, it could be 18 degrees. Mm-hmm. Worse than that, I have been trying to get off the mall after the fireworks on the 4th of July, and I will never do that again. I'll sit out in the middle of the mall before I'll go through those crowds again mm-hmm. because it's hot and sweaty, and of course it won't be in January,
right.
But it wasn't very pretty, and
there weren't that many people.
Well, that's it. The point is, it was a large crowd, but it wasn't 1 million people trying to board the trains.
Right.
So I don't think I'm going down.
No.
I say let's watch it at home.
Right. Good plan.
Now there's a little bit of news about the recount in the Senate. This is the Minnesota race with Al Franken, mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go through the details particularly, except to say that there were 133 ballots missing, but they had counted them once, and so the Republican...
Just once?
Well, they counted them the first time, and then they lost them. So they went for the recount, and they couldn't find them. Now, these are all numbered bags or envelopes, so they know there's one missing. They expected it to turn up. They searched for a couple of days. Didn't turn up. So the question is, if you can't recount it, do you take the original count, because since you knew it existed? And it favored Franken by, I don't know, 43 votes or something. And so the Norm Coleman side is saying, no, we shouldn't count that because we can't find it. And so the Supreme Court, I guess it's the courts, or else the election board decided they will count those votes. So a couple decisions have been made to move in Franken's favor. But really, all I really want to say about the Minnesota race is two things. The first is that the right has been trying to claim that Al Franken is going to try and steal this election. They've been saying that since it happened, because the Republican came out on top by like 200 and some votes in the beginning.
How close is it now?
It's less than 130, and it may be less than 100. Wow. So 3 million votes were cast. And this is the second thing I want to say, is that when elections are this close, we actually do not have the technology to know what the voters intended to do. It was the same in Florida in 2000, and the Democrats came on the short end of that, and the Democrats may come on the short end of this. But at some point, you just have to accept the verdict. And if it's that Franken wins by 33 votes or something, which is very possible, Democrats and Republicans are going to have to accept that result. We do not have the technology, the ability to distinguish when the races are that close. 3 million votes, and if it's within 100 votes, we literally just can't be that precise. Mm-hmm. It's like in the Olympics. In the old days, they didn't have watches that measured hundredths of a second. Mm-hmm. And so the timekeeping was a little sloppier, you know, tenths of a second. Now they can do hundredths and tell the difference in performances that they couldn't before. Mm-hmm. We can't really do this in elections. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Well, we are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about, well, it turns out Larry Craig is taking his last gasp breath. Caroline Kennedy would like to be in the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. And the South Koreans now have no beef with American beef. That's what they say. The Andy Finn Show and Finn Man and Robin will be right back.
Sous le long chemin. Du blanc de neige blanche, un vieux monsieur s'avance avec sa canne dans la main et tout là-haut le vent qui siffle dans les branches lui souffle le romance qui chante des petits enfants. Vive le vent, d'hiver qui s'en va sifflant, soufflant dans les grands sapins verts. Vive le temps d'hiver. Boule de neige et jour de l'an, et bonne année, grand-mère.
That is lovely, Robin. So, how long did it take you to learn that? No. Oh, you've known that for a long time.
No, actually, I have not learned it yet. I was reading it, I was cheating.
But you prefer in a foreign language.
I do, indeed. It sounds really dumb to me.
Jingle Bells is the dumbest of the Christmas carols.
I refuse to sing it, and with I just found it the other day in French.
Right, right.
But it's adorable.
Yes, it is. Maybe the only one dumber is We Three Kings, because the way we used to sing it is We Three Kings when we were kids.
Right.
We three kings of Orient are puffing on a loaded cigar.
Good King Sauerkraut looked out. Pogo.
Is that from Pogo?
Yes.
That's pretty funny. Well, let's see. The Andy Finn Show is back, but are we going to do Wackos and Bunkos tonight?
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
Well, then, I should.
Let's see where they are.
I should cue it up.
Bunkos and Wackos and Bunkos.
Do you feel inferior? Do you sometimes think you're not as bright as the rest of us? The Andy Finn Show has the cure. Listen to stories about some real idiots. Yes, it's time for another edition of Wackos, Bunkos, and Locos. Tales of the Not-So-Bright Among Us.
The Not-So-Bright Among Us. I met a few of those people in the last week. But that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about people in the news.
Well, some of them are not too bright.
Exactly.
See, I've got something from London. Recurring themes. Travails in travel. The Sun in London reported last July that a truck driver hauling a 32-ton load from Turkey through several European countries headed for Gibraltar in the southern tip of Spain, but missed his destination by about 1,600 miles, winding up at a dead end in Skegness, England. Gibraltar is a British territory, though nowhere near the British Isles, but both places have a Coral Road, which was the destination.
So he went for Coral Road in the wrong, not just the wrong part of town, not just the wrong town.
I think he has ADD.
The wrong country. He was on the right continent, wasn't he?
No. Let's see, Gibraltar.
Yeah, well, he was in Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, a lot of people say England isn't really part of Europe.
That's right. Well, it's not on the continent, but so you'd think that.
Yeah, exactly. You would think you'd know you need the channel.
Right.
Or a slow boat.
It. You wouldn't get on there. You know, you'd stay in England. You'd stay on off the continent.
Exactly. So you would think that.
But I think
anyway,
he has ADD.
He's got ADDDD.
But, you know, in Tampa, the Tampa Tribune, we've got another travel travail. Larry and Diana Moyer set out in November from Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, in their oversized RV to spend some warm days in St. Petersburg, Florida. Since they travel with their pets, Jack, Diana's service kangaroo, and Edward, an elderly goat that uses a cart for mobility because of front leg paralysis, their route south was circuitous, to say the least. Several states, it seems, have restrictions on exotic pets.
In the motels or just on the road?
No, in the motels, yes.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. You know, Tom Burdett will let him in.
Oh, that's right.
Just leave the light on for him.
The RV broke down three times. In Florida, Larry had a stroke and was hospitalized for 2 days.
Is that the goat?
No, that's the guy.
Oh, okay.
Then a fuse box circuited and the RV was burned up, torching their money and IDs. Diana, the girl, was hospitalized for smoke inhalation. Then, with Red Cross help, they found a motel that accepted goats.
But really?
But not kangaroos.
Oh, so you know, Jack, that's discrimination. Does the ACLU
really
know about this?
No.
They should be all over this.
So Jack, the kangaroo, went to overnight to a wildlife facility. At press time, according to a Tampa Tribune report, the couple had bought a junk car and were headed home with Jack, the kangaroo, curled up on Diana's lap.
You know, that is so touching.
It makes me not want to travel.
That is so touched.
It's touched.
Touched.
Right.
Touched in the head. That's weird.
Let's see. Science on the cutting edge. Oh, another thing from London. Latest off-label uses of Viagra. The Sun reported in November that Calvin Maltese, too, of South London, has been forced to take Viagra four times a day since he was 3 months old, to stave off a potentially fatal case of pulmonary arterial hypertension. And the New Scientist reports that last year, Argentinian researchers discovered that hamsters fed Viagra endured the rigors of jet lag about 50% better than hamsters fed a placebo.
I have no comment, although I'm an expert in research, and I'm an expert in placebos. I was raised on placebos.
Well, shut my mouth.
And call me Slim. Or something. Is that it for wackos?
That's it.
Okay. Well, we've still got wackos in the news, but we're just not officially under wackos because Larry Craig, I think the sad saga of Larry Craig is coming to an end.
Oh.
His appeal was rejected. Of course, he's been trying to get the Minnesota courts to allow him to withdraw his guilty plea. He pled guilty to disorderly conduct because he thought he could get away with it. He thought no one would find out because he didn't go home and tell his wife, hey, guess what happened, honey? You know, they're going to let me plead disorderly. And, you know, and I was entrapped, so I'm going to just do this as the easiest way out and I'll pay the fine. No, he didn't tell anybody. He didn't tell his staff or anything. He thought I could keep this on the QT. Hmm. And, of course, nothing's on the QT when you're a U.S. senator horsing around in public restrooms. And so, and of course, it was ironic that the Republican convention was in Minneapolis this time because a lot of people stopped by the bathroom.
Oh, no.
The Minnesota Airport has been asked to put up some kind of a marker so people can find it, but they're unwilling to do that, apparently. Hard to believe. He is a senator. You know, they could rename that bathroom after him.
They could.
They probably won't.
And have an unveiling.
Okay. Oh, I think there's probably unveilings going on a regular basis. But this is a family show, so we're moving on. So what do you think of this notion that Caroline Kennedy is lining up and thinking that she might like to be a senator from New York?
Well, I think she's a woman of gravitas and a woman of... she's a serious person. I think she's very capable, unlike Sarah Palin. I mean, I think she'd...
Sarah Palin doesn't think she's capable?
I don't. No, she doesn't. She likes Hillary Clinton, but she doesn't think Caroline...
She says she likes Hillary. That was a backhanded... Yeah. She gives Hillary backhanded compliments.
But I think there's... I mean, people are saying that, you know, what background does she have? But
her father was the president.
Didn't have very much experience when she ran for the Senate.
Her husband was president.
That's right.
Well, the difference, of course, is that Hillary actually ran for Senate and won it. She went for the brass ring and reached it.
That's true.
This is... It's like, you know, when Schwarzenegger didn't just decide he was going to become governor and run in a regular race, he jumped in when they had this
recall
election. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know... 13 people ran. Gary Coleman ran in that race, I think.
That.
No relation to Norm Coleman, the Minnesota senator.
Uh-huh.
And
are you
so,
sure?
I think so, although he might have been because he was in that show where he was...
They could be twins, like Schwarzenegger and what's his name, Danny DeVito.
Well, except that it might have been... Coleman might have been adopted like he was in the Different Strokes television show because...
right.
Different colors.
So maybe they are related.
Well, I haven't seen them sticking up for each other yet, but it could happen. But anyway, the Caroline Kennedy situation is interesting because now when you've got someone just designates you senator, people are like, hey, I'd be willing to be a senator if I don't actually have to get into politics.
Have they decided, though, yet whether or not they're going to be appointed or they're going to have a special election?
Well, so there's two... situations here. Well, there's several situations, but in New York, they do not have a scandal, so they're going with the appointment because that's the way it works in a lot of states. The problem is it costs about $5 million to put on an election, depending on the size of the state, and it takes months, and people have to raise a lot of money to run, and so it's easier just to start with an appointment and then have that appointment carry you over to the next regularly scheduled election. Mm-hmm. Special elections are very expensive. Mm-hmm. But in Chicago or in Illinois, where a governor, is it Roy?
Blagojevich.
Where he has been accused of trying to sell Obama's Senate seat, they've decided they're probably going to go with a special election. See, this is the Democrats giving up an advantage. If he hadn't screwed things up, you'd be sure we'd put a Democrat in there.
Yeah.
Now it's possible a Republican could win this. So naturally, all the Republicans in the state say, well, to be fair, we need to have an election. Mm-hmm. But in general, most Democrats are saying that, too. Obama's saying that, I think. Harry Reid and some people in the U.S. Senate are saying, no, let's have the lieutenant governor, when he becomes governor, appoint someone. Mm-hmm. But the process is tainted enough. I think the Democrats have forfeited their right to have an appointment. Yeah. You go with an election, and hopefully they won't elect Gary Coleman.
It is a mess, isn't it?
But in New York, they will do an appointment, and they're doing an appointment in... they already have done the appointment, or announced who it's going to be, in Delaware to take Joe Biden's seat.
Oh, who's that?
A caretaker. So Joe Biden's... And I hate this nepotism. It's the same with Caroline Kennedy. I don't really want Caroline Kennedy to get the seat.
Now, a caretaker is someone who's just going to sit in until...
Until Joe Biden's son comes back from Iraq. Mm-hmm. And so it's someone from his staff, I want to say, but certainly someone he's known a long time. Maybe he did some PR for him or something. But the guy's... I think he's 76. He's in his 70s. Mm-hmm. And there's no way he wants to run and get his own term. And that's what they want. You don't want a young, ambitious...
Likely.
You don't want a young, ambitious politician who says, oh, I'll step aside when Joe Biden's son comes back. No, they don't do that. But the idea that that they're going to pass this on, the Senate seat, from Joe Biden to his son. Now, his son is accomplished in his own right. Mm-hmm. I think he's been attorney general. I think he is currently the attorney general of Delaware. But even so, win it in a fair fight. Don't go in. And I guess that's what he would do now. Because he's in Iraq, he would have to win it in a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got name recognition. Mm-hmm. Wonder if he can get Gary Coleman to come campaign for him. I just don't know if he'll do it.
I think he would.
Oh.
I bet he would.
He's desperate for attention. He would do it. Gary Coleman, that is, not Biden.
Right.
Well, so South Korea has overcome their fear of U.S. beef. And this isn't a big story or worth a lot, except it's always been, for the last few months, I've been incredulous that they have these protests over there. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people get together and protest U.S. beef. Hmm. I mean, can you imagine people getting together in this country and protesting the bad paint jobs on the, you know, the lead paint on toys that come from China? Wow. People complain about it, but they let the government handle it. They don't go out and protest it. Mm-hmm. But they have had this rabid fear of American beef because we had those two mad cows. Now, I think they were just upset. I'm not sure they were really angry. Mm-hmm. But they were diagnosed as mad cows, and so they, you know, tried to get all that beef and all those cows that were...
I haven't heard about that for months. I mean,
it goes back a couple of years, but they've had this ban on American beef. Uh-huh. And when people... So anyway, finally, they've started bringing American beef in. The first 30 tons of beef that came in went like hotcakes with a side of beef. And so South Korea seems to be over it. And it turns out that when you take American beef over there, it's much cheaper than what they get. Mm-hmm. And so they're now accepting our cheap beef mm-hmm. on toast. Hmm. So they're over it, and we're glad about it because, boy, that'll solve the balance of trade issue. I'm certain of it. Well, we are going to take a break and a little station break here. And when we come back, we're going to move on to this little story that's in the press. You know, Bush and Obama are apparently cooperating, ostensibly. But the Obamas asked if they could move into the Blair House as a guest room so their girls could start school, you know, after the first of the year. And they were told there's no room at the inn. Now, I thought it was the Republicans that were making the claim that Obama thought he was Christ-like. But it's Bush that's telling him that there's no room at the inn. So you figure it out.